Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us. You can call in your questions today by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Hello there, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Can I talk now?
You can talk now.
Yeah, you scolded me. You said I interrupt in your intro and it causes problems with the listening population.
I can't believe you're sharing radio secrets on the air.
I know. If people only knew, we ought to do one of those live video feeds as well.
Except for the gestures
that we share probably wouldn't be appropriate for that. So that's a good
listeners,
thing.
Listeners, only appropriate gestures here at Ask the Mayor. All right. We're going to start out with a number of listener questions this week. People like to ask the mayor questions. Let's start out with Sarah, who says, I really like the new, she calls them photo wraps, of the new traffic light control boxes along Salisbury at Kent Avenue and Colbert Street. Was this done by the city? Is there a plan to expand it to more control boxes?
They are really neat, but it's a little nutty because we try and do things in a way that we can be consistent. And one thing about government is that it's always such a challenge to do things the same way time and time again. The other thing that we try and do a lot is if it's specifically at an intersection or to have something to do with traffic safety, pedestrian safety, bicycle safety, et cetera, we got to be careful about how we adorn things because we don't want to distract the drivers and the bicyclists and, in my case, the runners. So this is a program that is, I believe, going through our street department.
Okay.
I think a lot of it has to do with interest from the private sector as well. I only recently noticed them as I was going down Calver, and they are pretty cool. The unfortunate thing about a lot of what government does is it's very functional. You know, rarely does somebody look at something that's utilitarian in government and say, wow, that's really cool and pretty. But this is one of those ways that, you know, we can kind of make our community pop. And it really does add kind of that neat sort of flavor for that particular area. You look at the north end of town and, in addition to the wellness center and the stuff that we're doing, you know, out towards that area, it's kind of barren. You know, it's residential and we've got some green space that we're kind of doing some neat things with. But this sort of stuff really does kind of draw some neat attention to things.
Now, we do have a flip side of the coin here, from Sarah. Let's flip that coin. And I believe this came up the last time you and I talked, actually.
Apparently we didn't.
You're waiting with bated breath here. On a recent Ask the Mayor, you were asked about the ugly metal signpost that remains at the intersection of Soldiers Home Road and Happy Hollow Road on the southwest corner of the overpass bridge. You have a thinking look on your face right now.
This is one of those things. Yeah, I got to drive there in my head.
Yes.
And I hit a lot of roadblocks in my head, and it's sometimes distractions and detours, so it takes a while.
So when the state removed their signage, they left this skeletal post with askew sign supports.
Yes.
Two
of them are actually straight and one's off kilter.
It drives me crazy.
I'm a little OCD about that, and I'm tempted some night to climb up there myself and fix it.
So you responded at the time that it would be up to the state as it belongs to them. Then they say, since Happy Hollow is now a city road, doesn't the post now belong to the city? Can't we get rid of it or ask the state to come take it?
I will, when I get done today, I will ask the state again. This is one of those bureaucratic defaults here that I'm going to pull, and I apologize in advance for how rambling this answer is going to be. But a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, as cities were growing around the state of Indiana, there was a lot of creative engineers, city engineers, that decided they were going to do particular designs for their roads. And it would be a great fit for their area of authority, but it might not mesh very well with some of the things that the state had in mind. And if you think back to when we were transitioning from dirt and gravel roads to paved roads, there was probably a general interest in making sure that there were more consistency. And so the state had then a big master plan for creating this transportation system for the state. And the cities then were still in the process of evolving to be able to get up to speed. So the state was very territorial about what they were responsible for. Regardless of how much local traffic is on it, if the state has it, they're responsible for painting it. They're responsible in some degrees for plowing it. They're responsible for all the signage on it. They're responsible for the maintenance of it in general. And as local government, we kind of give them sort of a high five for that, because guess what that does for us? We don't have to pay for it then.
Correct.
So then we can use our road and street funds to do the stuff that's going to be most impactful for our citizenry. I drive over that bridge a bunch, and it's one of those things that I notice. And like I said, I was tempted to climb up and fix it myself. We have a really good relationship with the state, and they're doing a lot of work down by the bridge on 52. I'll go ahead and give them a call and see if they can do something about that. But again, you know, I as a victim and as also a contributor to the frustrations of government, be patient, please.
All right. I hope that answers that listener's question. Okay. We chatted about this a little bit before the show started. A listener writes, please ask Mayor Dennis if it would be more cost effective to renovate the former Happy Hollow Grade School into a new city hall / community center and renovate the Morton School into condos for purchase, potentially by Purdue employees. That way, West Lafayette residents won't have to deal with campus traffic when they need to visit the city hall. And again, part of your answer may include a nod to events of this week. You just selected a new contractor for City Hall construction yesterday. So obviously this listener question in the realm of the hypothetical. So how do you feel about that?
Well, if I was magic and I could do the genie, fold my arms and blink my eyes and have things happen.
He did do just that.
And I just did that for the non-viewing listeners, which is everybody. But what it gets down to, and this is one of those complicated things that always makes everybody pull their hair out about government. We are leasing that building from the school corporation right now. It's technically theirs. And through the generosity and the cooperative relationship that we have with the West Lafayette Community School Corporation, we are able to utilize a certain portion of that building. Even with that understanding, there was a lot of work that needed to be done because it is an old, tired building. That's why the school corporation is developing the way that they are. They already have the three new schools now. The best thing that could possibly happen to that building is to either have somebody, whether they be within the private sector or the public sector, with a lot of money, which excludes us right now, go in there and completely rehab it. But with the plumbing problems that they have, with the structural problems that they have, I mean, it's safe and we're still able to conduct business in there. With just the age of that building, it would be a challenge. That building is 1 year younger than I am, and I'm really old. So, and I have a lot of infrastructure problems too. But no, it really would not be cost effective. And then you look at the other side. The Morton School is one of the most iconic buildings that we have. And it's been around forever. And the history of people that attended that school is extremely significant. And we consider that to be one of our, when we talk about some of the neat things about West Lafayette, Morton School is way up there. So we're kind of honored to be able to go back in there and to rehab it and pretty it all up and turn it into a functional government building again.
Okay. We have a question from Shelley.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Shelley.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, Shelley. And thanks for your question. I hope she is. So please explain how tax revenue will work for properties in Purdue West. If PRF is leasing the land, will the property be taxed as well as the buildings? Also, will any children living in any properties there attend county schools?
Okay, bunch of questions.
Right.
The area in Purdue West, first off, is within the county school system. So that's a yes. Tax base wise, though, it's kind of a thing that is, I'm going to make it very simple.
Sure.
Okay, real simple stuff. The Purdue Research Foundation pays taxes. Purdue University does not. And this gets really confusing when we talk about developments. People see some infrastructure work going up on campus. Some of it could be residential, arguably, or businesses that are going up on campus. They could be major research facilities, et cetera, et cetera. That benefits Purdue. That does not necessarily benefit the city, even though they're within the city, because it's a tax-exempt investment. The private sector, when they do something in the research park land, that's kind of their business side. That's Purdue Inc., shall we say. That does generate tax revenue for us. So there is a benefit for us to encourage that development on the western end. It's in a TIF district, which helps, you know, with that particular area. We can do a lot of improvements in that area. But more importantly, we're in a position to incentivize really cool things like Saab. So the answer is yes, yes, and also not so much, not so much.
Okay, Shelley, I hope that answered your question.
She's going to call up and say, who is that guy?
We have one more listener question. We'll close this off here. This is from Jean. I'm going to read what Jean had to say. There's obviously a trend to put roundabouts all over town. I question the need for these. especially considering what the cost probably is and how long roads are closed to do the work. Mm-hmm. An example is the Lindbergh Road closure, which was approximately 1 year when it opened recently. The roundabout at the Klondike intersection saves me about 10 to 60 seconds, depending on time of day and traffic. To me, to Gene, this is not a good trade-off for mm-hmm. the frustration of how long the road was closed. Mm-hmm. That is her statement.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to talk about roundabouts in general. Yep. There's a real logic behind how we do those things and why we do those things. In my former life, I invested way too many personal injury accidents. And a lot of them had to do with intersections, perpendicularized intersections. And even though they're signalized, even though they got stop signs, even though we paint them, we put flashing lights in the signals, we do all these different things to make sure people are aware that they either need to stop or need to go at these intersections. Because we're humans, sometimes it doesn't necessarily work that way. When we put our first roundabout in, actually 10 years ago now, geez, been around a while, there was a lot of pushback on that because people felt uncomfortable. They did not understand how to navigate the roundabout. There was a lot of confusion about lane switching, just the dynamic of a roundabout, the speeds that people entered on the roundabout, all these different things really created some concerns. But the overriding theory is that they are safer. And because I will explain why, because you had that look in your eye, I'm like, why is that? Well, at an intersection, when you have two vehicles that hit each other perpendicularly, somebody's going to get hurt. Even at low speeds, somebody's going to get hurt. By the nature of the roundabouts, and unfortunately, people out there, you can't see what I'm doing with my hands, and people that know me know I gesticulate a lot anyway, but the vehicles actually, they're more of a sideswipe. Mm-hmm. And there might be what we call property damage to the vehicle, but injuries are much, much less severe and much less frequent. The other thing about a roundabout is it's much more forgiving than an intersection. You've got a lot more latitude to move. As people are coming into the lanes. And the other thing is that when we put our first one in out at Jaeger, there is a learning curve, but we actually have a video.
Literally a learning curve.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Was that redundant?
No.
Okay. But there is a learning curve. Are we going to do Grammar Inc. here now? Are we going after
what?
This?
No, continue.
Okay. Anyway, there is a learning curve. Honest to gosh, you know, there's a learning curve when it comes to navigating through a roundabout. And a lot of times, just by doing it once or twice is beneficial depending upon the time when you do so. If you do it when traffic flow is light, not so much. But to really become an expert, you should do it when traffic flow is heavy. Case in point, a long time ago in a country far, far away, I lived in Ireland.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to drive in Ireland. I lived there for about 2 years. And first off, they're on the other side of the road.
They are indeed.
That was a challenge. But I got over that because I always remember steering wheel in the center. Okay. That's a good thing to do. The second thing is there were roundabouts everywhere, not just in neighborhoods and not just in urban environments, but also on interstates, their equivalency of interstates. And what that means is you have traffics. And again, the speed limit, I don't mean to be critical of all the Irish out there, but speed limits are generally a suggestion in Ireland.
Sure.
So on the interstates, they would, or not that, because it wouldn't be interstate, would it? On the major roads, people get going pretty good. And you've got trucks and you have cars of all sizes and shapes, trucks all basically having to come to these areas where there's roundabouts, right in the middle of the interstates or the highways. And they become so packed that in the Irish infinite wisdom, they put traffic lights in the middle of the roundabouts. Aha, I see the look of curiosity in your face. And again, it kind of defeats the purpose because they were put there to keep traffic flow going smoothly, but now they actually have stop signs and stop lights in one of these roundabouts. But case in point being is that even on interstates, with the understanding of how to navigate these things, it's fairly simple to do so. And it's almost like what we do now. You think back 40, 50, 60 years ago, you know, when there were still, when you were literally sharing, and again, I'm using that word again, sorry, you're actually sharing the lane with pedestrians, with bicyclists, with farm animals, with farm implements. There wasn't a lot of signage. The painting on the roads wasn't, the word doesn't come to my head, but you can't see it at night, illuminated, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you can't see the paint on the roads at night. There was a lot of things that happened back in those days, but we evolved, we learned, we created some rules to abide by when it came to navigating those roads, and the roads became much more safe. The same thing applies with roundabouts. There is a learning curve. We do the best we can to make sure that they're very well labeled. We encourage people to if they're not comfortable with it, look at our training video on our website. But they are a much more safe product than just the regular perpendicularized intersection.
Okay. You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I am your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much for joining us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. One of the big pieces of news here in the past week, Purdue students will no longer be able to present their current IDs to vote. They don't have an expiration date. They can get an updated card with an expiration date from Purdue for $10, which is less than the $25 they typically charge for a replacement card, but that's still a charge the student does have to pick up. And then the incoming freshmen in 2020 will receive those updated cards for free. And I know the argument has also been made that students can get a free state ID from the DMV, but then that could be a hassle for students who are here from out of state. So first of all, could this possibly depress turnout if students think they have to jump through too many
hoops? I mean, think about it. We do so much to encourage participation in elections. You know, college commuters are somewhat unique because, you know, you got people coming from all over the world. And when we have elections, you know, there has to be some official way to say, okay, this is who this person say they are. But back in the old days, a student ID was good. It was as good as gold. And when you were asked for some form of ID to prove who you are and where you live, you flip that out. And that was before they had that little magnetic strips on the back and stuff. And they're like, okay, and it would be good to go. We have evolved both positively and negatively as a society. And when we talk about the legitimization of identification, it's gotten really weird. And again, I'm defaulting back to my former life. You know, there would be a lot of times when you would have somebody involved in a situation that wasn't necessarily the most pro-social, and you need to make sure that that person is who they say they are. And there are certain qualifiers, you know, name, date of birth, you know, beneficially if you have a picture, and then something else that sort of empowers you to be able to tie that person to who they say they are. And the big deal is date of birth. And then the other thing is making sure that the ID is current. And that's what the date thing is. But it's not new. I mean, this isn't really a new idea. You would think that that would be part of it. You know, when you get issued an ID, that date, if that's one of the big deals, that would have been part of it. So it just seems like it was one of those things that had been going on for so long that people just didn't think about it. You know, I think that there should be a hurry up or some. I know that they say you can come in and get a sticker put on it now. I think that's a great start, but I think that... there's so many things that happen regardless of the situation. I mean, if you're trying to get an ID and if you're trying to, you know, prove who you are, all these kind of things, but there's always some basic tenets, whether it be a state issued ID, an employment ID, something to that effect. And usually one of the big qualifiers on it is a date of expiration or at least a date of issuance. So I think that, you know, it's one of those things that it was just an oversight. And I think Peter Bunder, our council president, stated it best. It makes us look a little sleepy.
Well, and Election Day is, even granted that today is August 1st, when you count on your fingers, as I did earlier, I mean, Election Day is, it's only 3 months or so away. So it is coming. I mean, I guess the other question is, what, if anything, can the city do to help enfranchise these student voters? How can you help this process along?
We do. I mean, the students have always been such an important part of our community, and specifically since I've been around as mayor, we involve them in every component where they're interested. You know, the old adage of, you know, teaching an old dog new tricks, well, that's tough. And we are all old dogs, comparatively speaking, to our student population. So fortunately, they've been involved in things from the Go Greener Commission to our Human Relations Commission. They volunteer to do a lot of service for us. So, you know, it is, now that they are truly, you know, within the footprint of the city of West Lafayette after we brought Purdue into the city, they're an important part of our population. They provide us a great deal of guidance. So, yeah, they're important to us. And when we talk about providing service as the mayor, when I talk about my citizens, I include the students in that conversation as well. So, and that's regardless. I don't need to see an ID of a Purdue student to know that I'm here to help. So with that understanding, and with the elections coming, the hope would be that if they are interested in participating in the local political process, that they would just take that natural step and get a sticker put on. I don't even know how much that costs. And again, I apologize. I'm not even sure of the process. Would they just go to the bursar's office? Would they just go, whatever they would need to do to get that done, I would hope that they would do that. And then the other side is I think there's been a good lesson learned, you know, by the administration. You know, this is one of those things, if we encourage their participation in the political process, whether it be here or at their home, they need to have the appropriate identification. And for right now, we should step up to make sure that it's valid by getting a date on it. And in the future, I'm sure the party's going to take care of it and make sure that it's right.
Okay. The West Lafayette Police Department is offering a self-defense course this month for women, RAD, which mm-hmm. stands for Rape Aggression Defense. Mm-hmm. And that class is full,
yes.
actually.
Yes.
And we were talking a little bit about this. Does this feel more urgent or necessary, do you think, right now, after a woman was sexually assaulted on the Wabash Heritage Trail system last month, and then after all of the attention that that case has mm-hmm. kind of been receiving locally?
Well, I can tell you right now, as the father of a beautiful young daughter, well, she's not that young anymore, and I hope she's not listening. But yeah, I mean, I think about it. But again, I've got that background, you know, from my former life. And whether it be here in West Lafayette, whether it be in the state of Indiana, whether it be in the country, whenever we're made aware that somebody is physically going to take advantage of somebody they perceive to be weaker, that's when our programs like what we're offering here through the West Lafayette Police Department become much more popular. One of the instructors, Marcus Slipper, he's an officer with the West Lafayette Police Department. He's a great guy. He and I were talking in the locker room just the other day. And he said, you know, he was talking about setting up the new dates. And he said, it's going to book as soon as we open up the dates.
Okay.
And I said, is that normal? And he goes, well, it's trendy. You know, a lot of times when we do put the classes, they always fill. But how quickly they fill is dependent upon what's going on societally. And I would venture to guess, and there's no way to research this to prove me true, but a lot of husbands, a lot of brothers, a lot of fathers, and a lot of people who have, you know, female partners are probably encouraging that they participate. The class is incredible. I mean, it's not going to turn you into a kung fu fighter, but in most instances of sexual assault, resistance is key. I know that these folks feel that because the first reaction usually by the victim is shock, and they freeze and they don't believe that it's happening. And through the RAD classes, they want to turn that moment of freezing into a moment of action. Mm-hmm. And sometimes all it takes is just training and encouragement to know that they're in a position to be able to do that.
Well, and we were just talking about the student population here, and I mm-hmm. don't know, I mean, if maybe there's a kind of a wellspring of more students participating in the mm-hmm. class when there are more students on campus, mm-hmm. I guess. And I guess I would also ask, and again, this is kind of a topic, you know, you have a law enforcement background, mm-hmm. you're the mayor now, mm-hmm. so you're coming at this from a few angles. You know, how has the discussion and the kind of, I think, increased transparency around the discussion mm-hmm. around, you know, issues of sexual assault mm-hmm. maybe impacted how these courses are taught or presented, or maybe even how many people are taking them? Because
We live in a world now where people are empowered to take control of their own environments. You know, when you talk about a campus environment, when you talk about a community like West Lafayette, where events like this don't happen routinely, and again, I'm knocking wood because that's a pretty cool thing. We are in a position to learn. You know, we're not going to be in a constant response mode or reaction mode, so we can learn from this. But traditionally, sometimes our preparation creates paranoid behavior, which could get us into some trouble. You know, we live in a country now where guns are proliferate. You know, I'm not a big gun guy. When you've had them pointed at you, you kind of have a different perspective on them. But, you know, as we evolve as a society, as we learn, you know, to be more independent on when it comes to our own personal protection, self-defense classes are going to become more and more the norm. And again, as the father of a daughter, I think that's great. Although I warn anybody now, don't mess with Michelle. She's bad. She is. But I mean, it really is. It really does help us sort of understand more of the psyche of the type of person who would assault a woman, and more importantly, how to immediately defuse. And just all you need is just a few seconds, nothing more, just to break and run.
Okay. Going to a different topic, a new athletic training program is being offered to West Lafayette firefighters and police officers to start with for West Lafayette employees through Franciscan Health. And it is a pilot program.
Yeah.
And I was curious if these specific departments have, you know, kind of some athletic, let's call them athletic training systems like this in place already. So how, I guess, for example, will this type of training and assistance be different or better than what they already have to work with?
Well, it's so cool to partner up with Franciscan Health. They have just been great friends and great stewards for good health throughout this community. And again, I'm not just doing a quick soundbite for them because I'm a frequent flyer because I have a tendency to fall off my motorcycle, but they really have been good. But the fact is that when you think about law enforcement and firefighting, when you think about our emergency services folks, oftentimes what happens is you are cruising around, doing routine patrol, things are quiet, you know, you're kind of getting into a little calm zone there, and then all of a sudden, boom, as fast as you can snap your fingers, something critical happens. So you're basically going from zero to 100 in a second. You know, it's all kinds of different things happen to your body. And if you're not in very good shape, that can create some issues with you physically. You know, that kind of extreme stress put on your body in that little period of time can be very stressful. Through this program, that allows for our police officers and firefighters to do some physical training that will empower them to be more healthful when it comes to those type of environments. The second thing is that a wellness program is more than just being able to, you know, bench press 300 pounds or be able to sprint, you know, in such a quick period of time. It teaches you how to eat better, how to get better sleep, how to deal with stress better. And with Franciscan Health and with the staff that they're basically exposing us to, that's crucial. If they'll let me, I might even join myself.
Okay.
Not that this is a stressful job. Well, interviews just drive me crazy.
And that guides us into our little final question here is, when will you start extending this offer to other types of city employees? It's kind of a wait and see process.
Well, I mean, that's kind of sort of, it's two-pronged. It's not just up to us. We need to have these conversations with the Franciscan Health Group to see how they want to proceed. But, you know, honestly, I don't know how much time I have left, so you have to wave your finger if I start going on too much. But, you know, you look at how we progressed as a society. When things became less pedestrian, we became more dependent upon machines. We don't walk anymore. We drive everywhere. We eat horribly. This is the kind of life lessons that's important for all of us. As I've referenced before on the show with Stan, my body is a rapid flowing river of liquid steel.
Mm-hmm. That's a great note to end on, Mr. Mayor. That is our time for today. Thanks so much for being with us, everyone. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Please send us your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.